हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीअद्वैतगदाधर शिव सरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
71. In his commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam 7.145, Sridhar Swami also explains that Jaya and Vijaya did not accept material bodies when they descended to this world. Sridhar Swami says, by the phrase Krishna Chakra Hatam Hasau, it should be understood that Lord Krishna destroyed the sinful reactions of Jaya and Vijaya, free from curse. It was, therefore, Jayan Vijaya's sinful reactions that were killed and not their bodies. They entered into Krishna's body, and then Krishna went back to Goloka. They went to Vaikuntha. When Krishna played his flute to call the gopis in the arena of the rasa dance, the gopis went to meet Krishna in their original spiritual bodies and left behind their imitation material bodies constructed of the modes of material nature, especially for that occasion. This is described in the following statement of Srila Sukadeva Goswami, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.33.37. The so-called husbands of the gopis felt no enmity towards Lord Krishna. Enamored by the influence of the external energy of Krishna, they thought that their wives were sleeping by their sides. They could not understand that they had gone to dance with Krishna. The Lord offered them all protection and support in their service. Right? So here's some more subtle elements that are going on now. Is that that Jaya and Vijaya, when they're coming to this material world, they're coming not as, it's not that they left their post, they expanded, and in that expansion they're coming and they're actually in spiritual forms. So then Krishna's just destroying that curse that brought them there. Right? So then they merge back into Krishna's body and go with him to Vaikuntha, and then for the next pastime, then again they're expanding and taking part. Right? And then the gopis, They go in their spiritual forms. The material forms stay at home with the husbands. So the husband thinks that they're there sleeping. Does that make sense? But in actuality, they're out with Krishna dancing. Like that. So that's why then the husband... You never hear that there's a problem in Vrindavan and all the husbands are upset with Krishna. You never hear about it. Any gossip you hear, it's always amongst the women. Right? But you don't hear anything that there's any problem with the men. That's because the material bodies of the gopis were there. Right? Because in the spiritual world, they don't have husbands. There's the thought that they do, because they have them here. Right? And because the two are connected, therefore they feel that they have husbands. But in actuality, in the pastime, there are no husbands. Does that make sense? Because there they only function in the spiritual body. But here, then, there's that material form, and that stays at home. So then you have more of these subtleties happening. Right? So all questions are answered. Just the difficulty comes is that the answers are more subtle than we expect. Right? The questions we have are because of the grossness. And so we expect some, you know, practical gross answer. But the thing is that gross answer comes in connection with something more subtle. Right? Verses 35 to 37. Brahma's concluding words to the demigods. In verses 35 to 37, Brahma explains to the demigods that these two doorkeepers from Vaikuntha, possessed of unlimited power, were within the womb of Diti and are the cause of the darkness. Nothing can be done to stop them, as it is the Lord's desire, explains Brahma. He alone will come to our rescue. Lord Brahma continued, "Those two principal doorkeepers of the personality of Godhead have now entered the womb of Diti. The powerful semen of Kashyapa Muni being covered, having covered them. It is the prowess of these twin asuras, demons, that has disturbed you, for it has minimized your power. There is no remedy within my power, however, for it is the Lord himself who desires to do all this. My dear sons, the Lord is the controller of the three modes of nature, and is responsible for the creation, preservation, and dissolution of the universe. His wonderful creative power, Yoga Maya, cannot be easily understood even by the masters of yoga. That most ancient person, the personality of Godhead, will alone come to our rescue. What purpose can we serve on his behalf by deliberating on the subject?" Right, so since the Lord is himself going to take care of it, then them deliberating on it has no actual benefit. Right, because what can they do? Since the Lord has ordained it, and then these demons are actually more powerful than they are, then by discussing it, it won't actually come to the point that they'll get any benefit. Right? So therefore, he makes the point, so why even bother trying to work all that out? Right? 35-37. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary, "We are dying right now. When will the Lord mitigate the situation?" Then the comment that you live or die depends on the desire of the Lord, but now at the time meant for protection, he will protect you. That is explained in this verse. We do not know how he will do it, though masters of yoga have all knowledge. They do not know, because even though the yogis can see past, present, and future, they can't actually see what the Lord does. So they can see past, present, and future within the material realm, but what the Lord will do, that they cannot see. What will he do to rescue us from destruction? What is the use of us pondering this? Instead of us reflecting on this, he will simply do it. Right? Because there, that he would come in the form of a boar, that is beyond their capacity to understand, right? And then he'll pick up the earth in the same time, right? Means if you're going to do one thing, why you'll only do one? You get many things done, right? So he'll pick up the earth, and he'll fight with the demon, right? So you picking up the earth, the best thing for picking up the earth, because it's in the water, is a boar, because they root around in all kinds of things and can pick things up. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So then, and at the same time, as you're dealing with this biggest demon in the universe, and he's so proud of his position, that what better way to lower his pride than he's killed by a pig? Right? Like that, not even a domesticated one, you know, nice shiny, you know, a wild one. Yeah, does that make sense? So that's the. Srila Prabhupada offers a conclusive instruction from this incident in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 3.17.1. Where is his footnote?
It was up at the top.
Oh, the Lord offered them all protection and support in their service. Okay, footnote 9. The Lord's protection is indicated by Jiva Goswami thus. My dear Lord, the one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon them, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you the respectful obeisances within his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.8. So then this is the position that Brahma is saying that should be taken. Right? Because these are, this 14th, that'll be Krishna's, Brahma's prayers to Krishna. So this will be what Brahma has discussed with him. And all. And so then that understanding is now what he's giving the demigods. It says, don't worry about it. Krishna is going to protect, as he said he will. At the same time as then you should just go on whatever's the reactions, because in other words, for themselves, whatever's going on in their life, that's just ordained. So you don't worry about that. You worry about remembering the Lord, offering everything to the Lord, because that will qualify you to go back to Godhead. Because the material will go on as it does. Does that make sense? You don't have to, let's say you put some yogurt in the milk, then it will just act. That's just, even though you're going to offer it to Krishna, but it still acts according to the natural way that yogurt functions. Right? So its nature and all that will go on anyway. And then you're offering it to Krishna. That's the special part. Right? So whether a devotee is making yogurt, or whether a materialist is making yogurt, the material element will remain the same. What changes is the consciousness. That's where you get the effect from. So in the same way as in our life, how things unfold, then that will be, the material nature will unfold how it does. But our consciousness, because that's changing, then we get spiritual benefit for that endeavor. Does that make sense? So that's why we don't worry about it. We can say, no, but Krishna changed. Yes, that's up to him. But we're willing to go through the material situation as it would naturally unfold. Now, Krishna adjusts that, nice. But the point is whether he adjusts it or not, that's not why we're worshipping him. We're not worshipping him to get a better material situation. Right? We can, and it's purifying. But if we want bhakti, then it should be that we're trying to go beyond that. So we may start with that, and we connect that to Krishna. But we should try to get beyond that. Right? Does that make sense? So, in other words, it may be what we're doing, but it's not our determination. Does that make sense? You know, just like someone has a determination to cook very nicely, but at the moment they're not cooking very nicely. But by determination, then they'll work on it, you know, study, practice, take advice from others. And in this way, then they'll become very good. Does that make sense? So the determination is pure bhakti, even if the practice is not, it doesn't actually matter. What matters is that determination to do it for Krishna. But the material will develop however it does. So, yes?
In other words, we have faith that Krishna will protect us, and how he will, that we shouldn't worry about.
Yeah, that we shouldn't worry about. We just do, we perform our duties.
Yeah.
You know, whatever we're supposed to do. Hmm. Right?
You know, because demigods are worried about how it's going to happen.
Yes, like that, but they shouldn't. You just worry about doing your duties. In other words, when you get to the border, you just speak nice and smile and be pleasant. And then how it's going to work out, that's then up to the Lord.
Okay.
Right. So the demigods should just go back, perform their duties the best that they're supposed to do. And then how it's going to work out. Because no matter how much they deliberate in that, that's not going to make the Lord appear. You know, and they're definitely in their deliberations not going to come up with a boar. That's definitely not going to be one of the options. Right? And the appearance will be from the nose of Brahma. That's definitely not going to come up. You know, so that's the whole thing. The Lord has fun. He does things in an amazing way that's attractive. And so that's why we appreciate him. That's why we like it.
Just a short question. Even the yogurt and the milk,
mm-hmm.
where he said the material doesn't change, but it's spiritual, which, you know, the consciousness.
Yes.
But is it not possible that the things can change materially as well because they are.
No, but the
consciousness is being changed?
No, but. So, yeah, it means it's possible, but what is the point of looking at it that way? You understand? Because we'll look at it that isn't it possible it can change because that's what we want to happen. So what has that got to do with Krishna? You know, it's just like, let's say we don't have much money, we get more money. Okay? What has that got to do with Krishna? Because all the money is his anyway. So the point is whatever you have, you're using Krishna's service. So whether you're using, you know, 10 rupees in Krishna's service or 10 crores in Krishna's service, it's the using of Krishna's service that's important. You know, it's not like the squirrel's down there kicking in his little sand and he's thinking, because I'm a devotee, then he'll turn into a big monster, you know, 100-foot-high squirrel, you know, chirp, 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 you know, like that, you know. And then he's picking up, you know, I mean, let alone picking up the mountaintop, he picks up the monkey that's carrying the mountaintop, tosses him in, you know, because he's the, you know, mega, mega squirrel, you know, squirrel man. Yeah, you know, does that make sense? So he's not looking for that. So the Lord, to him, since it's all his, it doesn't matter how much of it you're engaging in service, as long as it's engaged.
That's a love which you offer it with.
Yes. So that's the dynamic principle that we're talking about. So now if Krishna wants to change it, that's up to him. But we're not looking at that side. So we're saying from the philosophy, Krishna takes care, and by karma is that if you're supposed to, Prabhupada gives an example, you have your arm cut off, you only get a little cut on your finger. Right? So, but that's Krishna. But if that's why we're doing it, then that's karma. Right? We're turning to Krishna, so that's good. But it's not as good as if it's pure devotion. So in other words, in our own life, we look at it, whatever, you know, I've done things in my life that aren't that great. So if I get the reaction for that, that's just. But the point is like we see the Kumaras and the doorkeepers, is that we can always hear, chant, and remember the Lord. Then what's the problem? Because if we're remembering the Lord, then it doesn't matter where we are. We'll say, no, but if it's worse situation, I won't be able to think of. But what we call worse, someone else would call that a better situation. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole point. It says, whatever situation you're in and you think it can't get any worse, someone else would love to be in that situation because they'd tell you that's a step up for them. You know what I'm saying? And what we'd call, that's the situation, if I could make $100,000 a year, that would be great. You know, but there's, billionaires, that if they were making $100,000 a year, they'd be shooting themselves. You understand? So that's the whole point, is whatever we say is great, someone else says it's bad. Whatever we say is bad, someone else says it's great. So it's all relative just to our conditioning. So that's why we don't, that's not the point that we're doing it. Right? But he points out, even if that is why you're doing it, still you should know that there's beyond that, then that position being purifying will advance you towards actual pure devotional service.
Gradually.
Yes, gradually. But it's not about the gradually.
No.
You understand? That's justice. Why is it he's getting more?
No.
You know what I'm saying? So we always have to be there. That's what sadhana means. Sadhana means gradual, step by step, we get there. So the gradual here means by each step. Because you get somewhere by step. You know, you're walking from here to the temple. It's gradually. You only take one step at a time. Right? I mean, you can go out there and take a really big step. But, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Srila Prabhupada offers a conclusive construction from this incident in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 3.17.1. We may be disturbed by some material condition, but if we approach the authority who can actually explain the matter, then our problem is solved. Because it's about, if you understand what's going on, then what's happening doesn't bother you as much. Right? Like that. So that's the whole point, is because then you know what's going on, and so, like that. It's when there's ignorance, then our problem is solved. The demigods approached Brahma for the meaning of the disturbance, and after hearing from him, they were satisfied and returned home peacefully. Because now they knew, this is just how it's going, it's the Lord's pastime, and the Lord comes in his pastimes to protect them and make everything proper in the universe, so it's all going to work out. But it doesn't mean that it won't be a little fun in the meantime. Right? Okay. Parashishma. Disciples' faults and guru's reputation. A wrong act committed by a servant leads people in general to blame his master, just as the spot of white leprosy on any part of the body pollutes all of the skin. Right, so that's always thought, that's another way to keep oneself doing things properly, because if it doesn't go properly, then the blame will fall on the superior. Right? As Krishna's saying, the doorkeepers are there, then one will think, you know, what kind of organization is this? You know, what kind of business is he running here, right? You know, it's like that. So that's the whole point, is that if something goes wrong, then you look at that. Like Duryodhana, it's his arrangement that he sends the Pandavas to Varanavata, the house of Lak. All the citizens are blaming Dhritarashtra, his father. Like that. So it's not so much seen that who's done the wrong is that who's above him. Right? As you see, that's the interesting thing in the modern, is you keep it down on the lower levels. You know, it's just like, what was it? That very famous one. I forget what it was, maybe in the 90s or something. There was some ops, black ops that were in the Middle East somewhere. And by whatever arrangement, the helicopter crashed.
Black Hawk Down.
Yeah, is that the one with the North?
Isn't that Mogadishu?
Maybe. It was something with the commander was some, you know, was some, what, I don't remember what it was other, but his name was North.
Yeah.
Oliver North, yeah. And it came fully on him. Zero went above. You know, the whole thing is why that's going on. It means, why would he be doing it? You know, he just has helicopters to do what he likes with, you know, and men, he's just sitting out there. What can we do today for some fun, you know? Like that. And so they go out. It means, of course, if you're military, you only do it because the top guys told you to do it. But it stopped at him. So that's the whole thing. In the modern, they try to keep it down to there. You know, it's just like how you say the typical thing is the guy kidnaps, you know, somebody, and then the person they're trying to get comes and they saying, okay, you do this, I don't shoot them. But if you don't do that, then I shoot them. It's your choice. It's kind of like, what do you mean it's my choice? My choice is that you kidnapped him and here now you're going to shoot somebody? You know, like that. But they try to make it, I have nothing to do with it. It's up to you. I am just a, you know, how you say, very just and, you understand? So that's the Kali Yuga. It turns it. But in the tradition, this is how it works. If something goes wrong on the lower level, it means that there's some problem on the higher level. That's the tradition. Yes?
This means that...
It doesn't mean that there's not something wrong on the lower level. But it means, why is that happening? It has to go somewhere. Go ahead.
Yeah, the question is that this discussion ends up in the question that the guru should train their disciples.
Yes.
Otherwise, without training, how are they going to change?
Yes. Yeah, he should train. They shouldn't get upset. But at the same time, they shouldn't be stupid. So, he doesn't, you know, it doesn't fall on him. Yes, it all works out. So the whole point is, but it's a gentle thing. It's not about justice. In other words, if something goes wrong there, the disciple, then the guru will think, I should take care of this.
Yeah.
You know, like that. And so then others, then because of his position, then he'll take care of it. You know, so that's the thing, is that because it's a clear line this way, then it's taken care of like this. But otherwise, if it's done in the other way, then it works on the other side. And those who aren't as, you know, aren't in the ideal position to take care of it, then are the ones taking care of it. But, you know, in a sense, like a committee, they don't know the person, don't know the situation, they don't even care, you know, like that. And so then naturally it's not going to work out. But if those who are involved, then they'll work it out. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the problem. Due to the mode of ignorance, then everything becomes turned upside down. So what should be done is the last thing you'd want to do, because that's the worst thing. Right? What shouldn't be done, then that, of course, is the only option. That's the problem in the modern kind of construct. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't make sense, but that's what's going on. Yes, we won't get into that.
As demigods, we mind our own service.
Yes, we just do our service, and then, yeah, since the devotees are considered like demigods, then yeah, they should just stick to their service and let the Lord work things out. Yeah. Yes.
This is going to come up in a temple class soon too. Yamaraj takes the blame for the Yamadutas.
Okay, yes. Like that. Because he hasn't trained them in that. At the same time, it's not that they're open to it, but, you know, he could be working at it. So in other words, they're pious people, he just teaches them piety. Mm. They're not necessarily showing devotional inclinations, so he doesn't make the attempt.
Yeah.
But he could try to make the attempt. You know, it's like, here you have one of the 12 Mahajans, the greatest authorities in devotional service in the universe, and all these wallahs that aren't interested. You know, it happens. You know, it's like a, what do you call it? You know, it's like, I think like Prabhupada's mother. Then, even though here you have the great Acharya, but she was just worried that his health was okay. You know, but it's connected to him, so then it's glorious, but she doesn't actually know. And devotional service isn't really a prominent thing for her. You know, she's a very pious lady. And she's like, but, yeah, so it happens. Chapter 17. The victory of Hiranyaksha over all the directions of the universe. Pratigya. Varuna answered Hiranyaksha's challenge by directing him to Varaha. Pratigya. The solemn purpose of this chapter is extracted from verses 25 to 29. Thus, Hiranyaksha showed his splendor without dealing a blow. Moving about in the ocean for many, many years, the mighty Hiranyaksha smote the gigantic wind-tossed waves again and again with his iron mace and reached Vibhavari, the capital of Varuna. Vibhavari is the home of Varuna, lord of the aquatic creatures and guardian of the lower regions of the universe, where the demons generally reside. There, Hiranyaksha fell at Varuna's feet like a low-born man, and to make fun of him, he said with a smile, "Give me battle, O Supreme Lord." Thus mocked by an enemy whose vanity knew no bounds, the worshipable Lord of the Waters waxed angry, but by dint of his reason, he managed to curb the anger that had sprung up in him. And he replied, "O dear one, we have not desisted from warfare, having grown too old for combat." Riti, a philosophical elaboration upon the Pratigya, from Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 25. Materialistic demons sometimes appear to be very powerful and are seen to establish their supremacy throughout the world. Here also it appears that Hiranyaksha, by his demoniac strength, actually established his supremacy throughout the universe. And the demigods were afraid of his uncommon power. Not only were the demigods in space afraid of the demons Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, but so also were the aquatic animals within the sea. Like, as he went and he was playing around in there for a while, so they're definitely going to figure out, don't mess with this guy. Right. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 17th chapter, at the birth of the two demons, many ill omens appeared. Hiranyaksha, conquering everywhere, mocked Varuna. The two doorkeepers were born as powerful demons in the material world. Inauspicious signs appeared everywhere. The younger of the two, Hiranyaksha, took his club in his hand and began terrorizing the universe for the pleasure of his elder brother, Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyaksha journeyed to the ocean. He disturbed the aquatics and smote the ocean waves with his club, challenging Varunadeva for battle. The demon avoided Hiranyaksha's prideful words, telling him to seek Vishnu, who would fight with him and kill him. Shloka Anusharan, verses 1 to 15. The birth of the two demons, 16 to 19. The big demons grow up and Hiranyakashipu attains benedictions. 20 to 28. Hiranyaksha shows his splendor. 29 to 31. Varuna waxes angry. Verses 1 to 15. The birth of the two demons. The two gatekeepers were born as powerful demons in the material world. Inauspicious signs appeared everywhere. Sri Maitreya said, "The demigods, the inhabitants of the higher planets, were freed from all fear upon hearing the cause of the darkness explained by Brahma, who was born from Vishnu. Thus they all returned to their respective planet." Because now that fear will go. It's not that it won't be a disturbance, but now they know that what's the arrangement and that the Lord will take care of everything. So then they can go on nicely. So if they need to, you know, stay out of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha's way, they'll do it. Because they know that's how things are happening. Right? Otherwise they would before, what's happening? Why is this going on? But they just know this is how it's working. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, "The demigods who are denizens of higher planets are also very much afraid of incidents such as the universe is becoming dark. And so they consulted Brahma. This indicates that the quality of fear exists for every living entity in the material world. The difference, so in other words, when the lights go off, then even the demigods become dark. You know, not so much the house lights, but the universal lights go off, and they think, what's happening here? Right. Does that make sense? Just like the lights go off in your house or in a room, if you look out the window and see lights in the street, then you know, okay, the fuse blew or something like that. But if you look outside and everything's dark, then you start thinking, what's going on? Right? So, the difference between the demigods and the ordinary human beings is that the demigods approach authority, whereas the inhabitants of this earth defy authority. Right? So, that's the point. Sura means one who surrenders to the Lord when it's difficult. Asura means one who doesn't. That's the difference. So when there's a problem, then the demigods, they go to authority. They approach Brahma, they approach the Lord, like this. But the demons just make their own plan. It has nothing to do with higher authority. That's the... If people would only approach the authority, then every adverse condition in this universe could be rectified. Arjuna was also disturbed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, but he approached the authority, Krishna, and his problem was solved. The conclusive instruction of this incident is that we may be disturbed by some material condition, but if we approach the authority who can actually explain the matter, then our problem is solved. The demigods approached Brahma for the meaning of the disturbance, and after hearing from them, they were satisfied and returned home peacefully. Because the authority can see beyond what we're seeing. We may see the details that's happening, but what's bigger than that, than how that, what's happening in the detail, fits into the bigger picture, that's what we get from authority. So that's then what makes everything work nicely. Yes?
Sometimes it's bewildering when people hear that their problem was solved and Arjuna's problem was solved, but it doesn't appear so because he went through the battle, he healed, he was injured, and the whole thing happened. So how was the problem solved, actually?
Because for a Kshatriya, that's not a problem. You know what I'm saying? You know, just like the businessman, a power lunch is not a problem. You know, but for anybody else, that's indigestion right there. You know what I'm saying? Because it's just part of the duties. So the duties were. So the real problem is it's not actually understanding, not having the real knowledge. So that things change and adjust and don't always work the way you want, that's technically not a problem. That's just part of your duties are to. Deal with what comes. You know, just like, let's say, if you're playing a game, right? And you're playing against a machine. So how does the machine decide which of the 1 million varieties of plays it can do, it will choose?
I'm a program.
But I'm saying it'll be random.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
So, but then you're having to deal with working out the problem of going through that game and getting to the end of the game. But you don't consider that's a problem. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, for a Kshatriya to fight on the battlefield, that's not the problem. His problem is that on the battlefield were all of his family members. And so that was the real difficulty. Right? And so as soon as he understood how to look at that transcendentally, see it connected to the Lord, then his fighting is no longer a problem. So the duties of this world and the obstacles that come up performing the duties, that's not the problem. The problem is not seeing it properly in Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Because things don't work perfectly here. And even the Lord and his associates come here because it's fun. You know, you don't know what's going to happen. So in the same way, as that's how yoga maya functions in the spiritual world, is that there's a slight covering so that nobody knows how it's going to unfold. And so then that's the fun. Is that what I mean? You know, it's just like Krishna plays the flute. First thing is how to get out of the house. Right? So, but, you know, it's part of what one does. You know, it's not like, oh, why do I have to go? Oh, no, I got to go through this again. No, they're looking forward when it's time to sneak out of the house. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And then you know the area where you're going, but where exactly Krishna is, you still have to find him. It's not that, oh, now we have to look for him again. No, why can't he always be in the same place at the same time? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then it's that's the thing. In the performance of duty, it's not a problem. You know, if there's something you really like, even things come up, it's not a problem. You know what I'm saying? You like driving cars, you're going around the corner, the back wheels start to slide, you just turn the steering wheel the other way. It's great fun. You know what I'm saying? For anyone else, it's, oh no! You know, like that. But for them, it's just, you know, okay. Is that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's the whole point. That's where the variety is created. But that's the point, is since we're trying to be the controllers, and there, and then from that enjoy, we can't control. That's why we think it's not good. So it keeps changing on us and all that. So that upsets us. But for Krishna, who is the controller, that Yoga Maya controls it, you know, then for him it's fun. Is that amazing?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought of a, what do you call it? Example from, I'm not sure what grade it was, I think maybe 8th grade. They always have, they have you read all these stupid books, you know? Like that, you just really broaden your, you know, viewpoint.
Stupidity.
Yeah. Yes, so. Your students, your stupidity is not enough. So this year, you have on the curriculum a list of 10 books you're going to read to broaden that stupidity. It was that somehow or another this guy got shipwrecked, and he ended up on this island. And when he gets it, you know this one? But no, but then the guy on the island, he hunted humans.
Oh, that's good point.
Why? Why? Because animals, you know exactly what they'll do. But humans, you don't. So he's very nice, took care of him, got him back to health and everything like that. And when he's back and healthy, then, okay, the hunt's on.
Is there a fat guy called Piggy?
I'm not sure.
It's actually a movie.
Oh, now they turn it into a movie. But whatever it is.
They do that.
But if I remember, you had, this is one of the ones you had to read, and somehow or another this was very important.
Is it a satire?
I'm not sure if it was a satire. I just don't remember. It was like, it didn't have any more meaning than that. Because that's the problem. The teacher can't bring out any depth. All they know is that it's supposed to make you better. You know? So that's the thing, is that animals always do the same thing, but humans, you don't know what they'll do. So then that's the uniqueness. You know what I'm saying? So when you don't know, if it's something you really like to do, not knowing what's going to happen, then that makes it more fun. If you don't really know what you're doing, you really want it to go the way you hope it will. You know? Like that. You know what I'm saying? As you're going down the hill, you know, the ski slope, you're really hoping that's not actually a tree, but it's just a reflection off of the snow. Like that. But if you know how to ski, then that's fun. You slalom through the trees, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
so that's the whole... What they're meaning here is that we're taking it, no, everything should go exactly the way I want it, but that's not actually the fun part. The fun is you don't really know how it's going to go, and you just apply yourself. But the point is that when you know that it's the Lord's plan, then you know everything's going to work out. Because the Lord always supports the demigods, always supports the devotees, so, and that means you come closer to the Lord. So it works out nicely. That's
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. The virtuous Lady Diti had been very apprehensive of trouble to the gods from the children in her womb, and her husband predicted the same. On the birth of the two demons, there were many natural disturbances, all very fearful and wonderful, in the heavenly planets, the earthly planets, and in between them. There were earthquakes amongst the mountains on the earth, and it appeared that there was fire everywhere. Many inauspicious planets like Saturn appeared, along with comets, meteors, and thunderbolts. There blew winds which were most uninviting to the touch, hissing again and again, and uprooting gigantic trees. They had storms for their armies, and clouds of dust for their ensigns. So then breezes that are inviting to the touch, then that means it's auspicious. And when it's not, that's inauspicious. No?
Yeah.
So then one can understand the nature of the place. It says predominantly uninviting means that it's predominantly inauspicious winds. Srila Prabhupada describes the ominous import of such disturbances in his purport to verse 5. When there are natural disturbances like blowing cyclones, too much heat or snowfall, and uprooting trees by hurricanes, it is to be understood that the demoniac population is increasing, and so the natural disturbance is also taking place. There are many countries on the globe, even at the present moment, where all these disturbances are current. This is true all over the world. There is insufficient sunshine. There are always clouds in the sky, snowfall, and severe cold. These assure that such places are inhabited by demoniac people who are accustomed to all kinds of forbidden, sinful activity. Okay. Yeah, so then one could just, how do you say, in one's own personal thoughtfulness, apply this into the situations one's at. The luminaries in the heaven were screened by masses of clouds, in which lightning sometimes flashed as though laughing. Darkness reigned everywhere, and nothing could be seen. The ocean with its high waves wailed aloud as if stricken with sorrow, and there was a commotion amongst the creatures inhabiting the ocean. The rivers and lakes were also agitated, and lotuses withered. Misty halos appeared around the sun and the moon during solar and lunar eclipses again and again. Claps of thunder were heard even without clouds, and sounds like those of rattling chariots emerged from the mountain caves. In the interior of the villages, she-jackals yelled portentously, vomiting strong fire from their mouths, and jackals and owls joined them with their cries. Raising their necks, dogs cried here and there, now in the manner of singing, now of wailing. So it appears even dog singing is not auspicious. Oh, Vidura, the asses ran hither and thither in herds, striking the earth with their hard hooves and wildly braying. Frightened by the braying of the asses, birds flew shrieking from their nests, while cattle in the cowsheds as well as in the woods passed dung and urine. Cows, terrified, yielded blood in place of milk. Clouds rained pus. The images of the gods in the temple shed tears, and trees fell down without a blast of wind. Right now it's getting really serious. Right? Ominous planets such as Mars and Saturn shone brighter and surpassed the auspicious ones such as Mercury, Jupiter, and Venus, as well as a number of lunar mansions. Taking seemingly retrograde courses, the planets came in conflict with one another. Marking these and many other omens of evil times, everyone but the four sages, the sons of Brahma, who are aware of the fall of Jai and Vijay, and of their birth as Jiti's sons, were seized with fear. They did not know the secrets of these portents, and thought that the dissolution of the universe was at hand, 16 to 15. So they thought it was bad when the place just went dark. It was only getting better. Srila Prabhupada writes, to check the increase of demoniac population, The Vedic civilization enacted so many rules and regulations of social life, the most important of which is the Garbhadhan process for begetting good children. In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna informed Krishna that if there were unwanted population, Varna Shankara, the entire world would appear to be hell. People are very anxious for peace in the world, but there are so many unwanted children born without the benefit of the Garbhadhan ceremony. Just like the demons born from Diti, right? Because that's the point, is that there wasn't, we don't hear about that there was the proper timings, I mean, timing was used, and also all the different proper mantras and all that. So they were born without Garbhadhan, so we see is that they didn't turn out so great. Diti was so lustful, she forced her husband to copulate at a time which was inauspicious, and therefore the demons were born to create disturbances. In having sex life to beget children, one should observe the process for begetting nice children. If each and every householder and every family observes the Vedic system, then there are nice children, not demons, and automatically there is peace in the world. If we do not follow regulations in life for social tranquility, we cannot expect peace. Rather, we will have to undergo the stringent reactions of material laws. Right? So Prabhupada is mentioning this is a great science, if it's understood, because people don't think it's a science. They just think it's a matter of, you know, their opinions, their feelings, their desires. But actually, it's a science. You know, you want a particular quality of child, then there's a science how you get that. Right? Because it's all based on consciousness. Because the consciousness then attracts the subtle body attracts the gross body. Right? Does that make sense? So then this whole thing works out nicely. So the point of the demons, as we said before, is not because they have, you know, a shock of orange hair on their head and big, you know, fangs and stuff, but because of the mentality they have. That then generates that particular body. Right? It means if you took one of these guys, right, you know, bright orange hair, standing up straight on their head, big fangs and all that, and teeth and stuff like that, you know, and walk them down through a crowd of some of the younger generation, probably some of them go, wow, cool. Where did he get his outfit? You know? Yeah, which salon did he even go to? You know, like that, you know. So that's the whole problem, yeah. So Prabhupada's saying there's a science. If you follow that science, then you get good results. So the point is in the Vedic culture, everyone would follow. That's why everybody was of the caliber they are. So if you want to change that, then we have to change this, because that will determine the future generations. And then gradually, the social, you know, fabric will change. Right? So immediately everyone can change by devotional service. But to have it like completely on the social level also adjust, then it has to be because of this social activity. Right? Does this make sense? So that's why both Krishna consciousness is immediate for whoever practices it, and on the larger scale socially, then it will take some generations. Right? Then, you know, it'll start to work out. Yeah?
Yes? Now, we're in the golden age now.
Yes.
10,000 years. How Krishna consciousness the world will get, or consciousness.
What do you mean by how it'll get? You want like statistics, or
from now on,
how are you judging good? Everybody will have a Mercedes or something.
No, spiritually. Yeah.
Mercedes on spiritual. God gives Mercedes.
No mistakes.
Yeah, you don't hear of God giving BMWs or Audis, but he gives Mercedes. Right? Isn't it?
I'm not sure.
You don't spend much time with the Acharyas. So, what do you mean?
Well, from now on, in Kali Yuga, after the Golden Age, consciousness is going to decline.
So that's after 10,000 years.
Yeah, so how...
So if you're not going to be there, why worry about it?
Just wondering. Interested. So no.
But I'm just saying...
It's no use my own life.
Yes, yeah, so then why ask? You just know it's there. It's going to get better. Does that make sense? In other words, sense. More people will be Krishna conscious and follow Krishna conscious lifestyle. Otherwise, why would he get better? So that it just means there's an increase in the practice of Krishna consciousness. But what? You know, if you want details, that's another thing.
Are there details?
That means you have to look in the Puranas. I'll give you some details. Yes?
Previously, there was the understanding of pedigree and breeding, but they came across many different problems. It didn't actually, did it affect the rest of society?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like it's just like this, as you when you deal with times previously, histories previously, then would you say a prominent element that's brought out in the history is the kind of the character of the people, their mentalities and stuff? You know, it's just the nobleness or the this or that. You understand? But do you hear any of those discussions today?
Nothing.
In any history now?
I haven't done history for a
while. No, but I'm just saying anything that comes up. They never discuss these things.
The qualities are more.
The quality is less. Just like we mentioned before, I forget who was telling us that they had come across a website by the American Postal Service. You know, their official website, and one of the things they had was they called it "Letters from the Front," and they had somehow or another, because letters were sent but never delivered, that had come through the postal system. And so then, you know, specifically in wartime, that might happen. So they had all these letters. So they chose from those letters, you know, some very interesting specimens. And they go back to the Civil War. So they had from the Civil War and then you know, up World War I, World War II, Korean War, Vietnamese War, like this. And the interesting thing that this devotee was telling me when he was reading the letters is that the vocabulary, the language, the writing skill, the God consciousness, the concept of duty and everything that was there in the Civil War, you just had village farmer boys were the soldiers. But their education and how they would speak and view the world, you know, it would be hard to find an intellectual that could do that now. And then he says, then at World War I, you see something there, but it's dropped a bit. World War II dropped more. Then it just keeps dropping. And until the discussions are very simple and base. And does that make sense? So the effect is there, but because culture is not the aspect that people look at. So they only look at the technical development and things like that. Because, in other words, history is written by those who win the war. It's not actually a factual representation, just like we mentioned. I remember, you know, it's like all through, you know, 5th, 6th, all these, you know, again and again, you know, South American history, European history, this, that. And one of the things that stood out very much was the, you know, the they were calling it the age of the conquistadors. Right? The European, you know, who would go and you know, settle the new world. Right? Somehow or another over there, they thought it had been around for quite a while, but somehow or another, this is the new world. Right? And so then you hear about these great personalities who went and risked their lives and, you know, and further science and knowledge and everything like that and bring back wealth and everything. So they were presented in a very, you know, good light that these are the great guys. And then I was sitting, you know, for breakfast with one of the Brazilian boys. And I asked him, you know, in your history, how do they, you know, present someone like, what's his name, America Vespucci, and, you know, all these guys. What's the other, something, DeGamo, and
Vasco
DeGamo,
and, you know, and who's the guy around the other side, the back, with the P? Pizarro, or? I can't remember what it was, but there was someone, he was really nasty, like he killed the emperor and stole everything they had from the Incas, and, like that. So, you know, from us, it's like, you know, these are the guys who went out and conquered, dealt with the savages, and, you know, did something good. But from the local, you know, down there, it's that, you know, we were here living very peacefully, and then they came along, killed all the natives and everything, stole all of our wealth, and then they you know, are sitting there. You guys are so poor. Why can't you get it together? It's kind of like, you know, hey, you know, you took all of our investment. You know, it's like, so that's the whole thing, is that what we learn is not, you know, so the point is what is the perspective? That's how history goes. So the thing is if you look at it from character and culture, you know, it's just like this. Okay, let's take a modern, you know, Hollywood, you know, how you say, action drama, okay? And our hero of the film is now, there's a whole group of people, and they're coming up with knives, and one by one, stabbing him. What would he be doing? He'd be yelling and screaming and fighting, and it would be a whole scene going on. How did it work with Caesar?
He made some comment.
He just made a comment. Because it was just emotion to emotion. You know, dignity to all this kind of stuff. Because it's like, here's all the people that are working with him. Why would they do this? So he's just so amazed. Why is this happening? You know, but because he's stronger than any of them, he's standing there the whole time. And I think, I can't remember how many of them stabbed him, but it was some ridiculous amount. But he did fine until Brutus stepped up. And then that broke his will. You know, so it's all about character and these things. And, you know, like the Iliad, the Odyssey, it's all about their character. You know, what goes on, they don't describe that much. This one shot an arrow, that one came back, this guy cut off his head, and then that was it. You know, it's like a battle is a few sentences. But when they describe the character and the moods and that, they take up pages. So that was what was of value. So you can see it's because of that it was there. Now, due to lack of God consciousness, due to lack of the Vedic culture, then all this, you know, character and pedigree wasn't applied properly. Therefore, they became proud, they would exploit, they would do all these things. You know, does that make sense? And so if they had been trained the character, then all that kind of glory would have had a better development. Does that make sense? So they're looking at it, people that have this standard, then they exploit. So if we get rid of them, we get rid of exploitation. Right? And before it was, you knew that, okay, this particular group of nobility was doing this. Right? Now it's everybody. You know, so it's not that's been solved. You know what I'm saying? And so then basically it comes down to anything that's to do with authority is bad. Don't trust authority. Everybody wants to be the authority. You know, that's the fun part. Does that make sense?
So this is a grassroots solution to the...
That's the only way, is that unless through this process, the Garbhodan, that you produce a better quality of children, then they can be trained to function on a social level much higher than goes on today. The reason that the culture is what it is because that's all the farther you can get it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you know, it's just like, let's say, okay, let's just take riots. Okay, now India is known, it's had some good riots in its day. But what were the riots over? No, they're in 55 when there was a famine in Bengal. People wouldn't steal. They would die in front of a rice shop but wouldn't take anything. Like that. So they would fight over religion. Okay, then there'd be some big riot, Hindu-Muslim riot or stuff like that. But just a few years ago in England, what was that riot about? That was just kids being stupid. Going out, breaking, burning, you know, why? What was, you know, was there a political motive? They didn't, you know, they were tired of being another brick in the wall. What were they doing? No, they were just going out there to just be stupid. Yes?
A stockbroker got arrested for rioting, who earned a couple of hundred pounds a year. And he was asked by the journalist why I do it. He said, because I could.
Oh. Yeah, because he could. Everybody was...
Money.
Huh?
He didn't need the money.
No, so it was, you know, so that's the whole thing, is that this whole character is gone. It's not that there's some higher principle. Like before, okay, you have all these revolutions as some political thing or some freedom, or something higher. But this is just just they're just doing it to just be crazy, just be like you said, just because they can.
So Gavadana, the Dhavana Shankara, their quality of sense gratification is really disturbed. Really,
it becomes, and with time, it becomes worse and worse. You know, so that's the whole thing. Is that, so you know, there's a standard way of doing things of sense gratification, and it's good. You know, it's like not getting up in the morning, not eating at a regular time, not really actually bothering to arrange anything. How much sense gratification can you get out of a bowl of Cheerios? You know what I'm saying? You know, and that's if you got a box of it. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, how do you do? But like before, you know, you cook things, or you know, the family would have a meal together. You know, they would sit, the time, you can interact and all that, but that's considered bad. But then, you know, not having the meal together, how does the sense gratification improve? Lifestyle improve, the quality of life, the quality. You know what I'm saying? Houses get smaller and smaller. Before they were bigger. You know, before probably when they were living in a hovel, it was probably better than some modern, you know, $1,000 a month, you know, one room apartment. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole, you know what I'm saying? If we go back, oh, you know, the serfs, you know, they had to live in, you know, in squalor, right? Okay, you know, they ate organic food because there wasn't anything else, right? You know, it was came from local, so it wasn't like imported from somewhere else, right? All the cloth they were wearing was some natural fiber, like this. And, you know, they were living, you see these hovels that they live in, these huge rooms. You know, probably their hovel was as big as the footprint of this building. You know, you don't see them packed into some little thing like that. You know, maybe you see them packed into one of those, you know, transport containers, but that's a different thing. That's not where they live. You know what I'm saying? And like that, they got cows, they got land. And these are the suffering serfs. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And nowadays, you know, you have the glorious professional who lives in, literally in a one-room apartment. I don't mean one room meaning it's, you know, a studio. I mean it's one room. And the bathroom's common down the hall. And that's $1,000 a month. And that was actually told to me, actually, I haven't been in America for 4 years. So it's more now. You know, and somehow or another, that's glorious. You know? You understand? So that's the whole problem with the history, is it always looks like it's greater now and before it was worse, but if you look at it, it was better when it was worse. You know? Where else does that phrase come from? So the quality of relationship and life actually was better. You know, it just depends on your perspective. You adjust the perspective. That's why I was asking Prabhu here. What's the perspective that things are going to be better? You know, because then how do you decide it's better? So the golden age means there's more Krishna consciousness. Now, if there's more people Krishna conscious, then automatically things start to develop. You know what I'm saying? You want material facility. There's more devotees here. So it's a bigger community. They just, it was 3 days ago or something, opened a supermarket. Isn't that what, you ever heard of a supermarket in Mayapur? Right, you've got Nimai's shop, you know, you get, you know, produce from 3 weeks ago, right? You know, so you know, they opened a supermarket, so. So it means materially things are developing. You know, so if that's... If that's the standard you're looking for, hey, you know, this is the golden age. It's happening. You know what I'm saying? But it's because there's more Krishna consciousness. So the material facility will develop, but that's because the consciousness is better. You know what I'm saying? You have so many people in the mode of goodness, therefore then you have the architecture, everything that's there in India. You know, you see, even in the West, when there's more religion and more of that, then you see all the great architecture in that. And then as you drop the standard, you know, then you know, the Protestants aren't really great at architecture. You know? Sad to say. Probably if you check, you know, was it, you know, the Bauhaus guy was probably not a Catholic. Does that make sense? Does that work? Something else I use?
Does the chanting of 50 rounds before conception also include, is included within Garbhagriha and Samskara?
Is it concluded within Garbhagriha?
Included within Garbhagriha and Samskara.
Meaning that there's something else, and then is this 50 rounds included within it, or
is that part of the Garbhagriha and Samskara process? Chanting 50 rounds before.
Well, otherwise, where do you get 50 rounds from? It's Sunday afternoon, so we should chant 50 rounds. Or it's January, so we should chant 50 rounds. Or
I was told that before conception, a person has to chant 50 rounds.
A person.
The parents.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The central parents.
So. Yes. No, because that's what Prabhupada gave, is that because to raise the consciousness by more chanting. You understand? Because the whole idea of Garbhadan is to raise the consciousness. Because if something's done, something's planned, then you're dealing with the mode of goodness. So you're going to get more effect than if you don't do that. Yeah, so if somebody's saying, it's sometimes a funny comment between, you know, adults, you know, or householders with kids. They're talking to somebody else who's, or about someone else whose kid is, you know, wild. You know, and they say something along the line, and that's 50 rounds, you know? So you could imagine if they hadn't chanted the 50 rounds. You know, so. You understand? Like that. Because that at least will bring in the Krishna consciousness, because the other ones you can't necessarily expect will happen. That means that the Ayurveda is talking about well before, I mean, as one is you're discussing having children, and then what does that mean? What kind of children? How will they be trained? How will they be raised? How all these different things? So then you're very clear on what kind of personality you're looking for. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Then from that, then you get into, then you've chosen a time, and then you're moving towards that. So everything's regulated. So then with that whole over long period of time means all this chanting's been going on all this time. Right? You know what I'm saying? So the samskar, therefore, is very short. But if not, at least then if you chant the rounds, then it works. You're at least some regulation, but more important is that there's more increase in Krishna consciousness by the chanting. Does that make sense? Yeah. Verses 16 to 19. The big demons grew up and Hiranyakashipu attains benedictions. These two demons who appeared in ancient times soon began to exhibit uncommon bodily features. They had steel-like frames which began to grow just like two great mountains. Verse 16. Srila Prabhupada indicates the demoniac concerns in his purport to verse 16. There are two classes of men in the world. One is called the demon and the other is called the demigod. The demigods concern themselves with spiritual upliftment of human society, whereas the demons are concerned with physical and material upliftment. It means that's all they're worried about. You know, is that people are healthy, you know, things are developing, that the social system is developing so that everybody, therefore, materially can be happy. So that's demoniac, because it's not including the Lord. You include the Lord, then automatically, it's not that the demigods don't have those things, but it's not the primary concern. That's the thing. Modern society tends towards the demoniac because that is the concern, right? Because if you're going to have a secular society, then automatically you can't have God consciousness involved in it, right? So it's one thing, secular being that, okay, you don't connect the two, but it's not that you don't encourage that there should be God consciousness. You understand? So even the whole thing gets thrown out as a principle, right? Does that make sense? So then the problem comes up is this. The two demons born of Diti began to make their bodies as strong as iron frames, and they were so tall that they seemed to touch outer space. They were decorated with valuable ornaments, and they thought this was success in life. Originally, as planned in Jai and Vijay, the two doorkeepers of Vaikuntha were to take birth in this material world, where, by the curse of the sages, they were to play the part of always being angry with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As demoniac persons, they became so angry, they were not concerned with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but simply with physical comforts and physical upliftment. So, as you increase the anger, it goes more in this direction. Right? So that means if this is there, then we can see underlying this great anger in the society. Otherwise, why just a little touch immediately flash and there's riots and fighting and everything like that? Does that make sense? So that's the thing. You know, like before, you had during the Kuwait war, then at least in the West, because they got their oil from there was a shortage of oil. And so then, you know, people would have to queue up, you know, something that you never do, right? The standard American ideal is you ride up in your gas guzzler and drive right straight up to the pump, and basically there should be no one else there. Okay, they could be on the other side, but they're not on yours, so you never have to wait. It just doesn't happen like that. You know, so here they have to stand in lines of maybe blocks long, and people would shoot each other. You know, it was actually crazy. In India, the same thing happened. India didn't get one drop of oil from Kuwait, but the businessmen saw the opportunity, since it was going on in the world, make a shortage and can raise the prices up. The prices haven't gone down since then. Like that. They doubled the price or tripled the price and something like that. And everybody's standing in line just like that, and they get out of their cars and hang out, talk to each other, and, you know, like this, and have a good time and slowly get their petrol and then go off. Because there's greater God consciousness. Right? So there's less anger. But as that anger is greater, then the focus gets more on just the bodily consciousness and everything like that. So anger is actually very strong in the society. But we are thinking that everything's nice because you put a veneer on top of it. You know, you work out how all these angry people can work together. You know, like that. And then they consider, now this is nice. You know, but one thing goes wrong and it's a problem. Yes, sir?
There's an analogy which talks about anger, that in making devotees, if the fruit on the tree has become overripe, and when they're frustrated, it's good to be able to pick it, but when they become overripe and angry, then it's difficult to actually make.
Yeah, because there's too much going on. But anger comes after frustration, so since the whole society is based on sense gratification, who's actually gratifying their senses to the degree they want? Yeah, so therefore, then underlying they're all angry, but because of the training of the culture, then there's a little bit less. But you give it time, all that, the anger, the more, it'll just break down, and then we'll have, you know, Mad Max, you know, like that. So then it's just all this insanity going on, and then we'll consider that this is, you know, we're saying, oh, that was barbaric. All it was is, we're saying that they're not more organized and more sophisticated. That's the barbarism. Right? Does that make sense? But we're not talking about the mentality, because the mentality is the same. You know, it's just like, okay, the bobber boots wallahs. Skinheads, you know, that they go to the footy match, you know, and like that, and, you know, they have to have a bit of a rumble, you know. So no one's worried that they're fanatically, you know, committed to the sport and their faces and hair is green. You know, that they're not worried. They're supporting their team. This is good. The only problem is that they're just bothering others in the process. You know, so being totally attached and totally mundane, that's not the problem. The problem is just in doing that, then, you know, they're stepping on people. Right? And somehow or other the people aren't, you know, appreciating it. You know.
It's hooligans, not skinheads.
Hmm?
Hooligans, not skinheads. Hooligans.
Hooligans. So skinheads aren't hooligans.
but they don't go to matches.
They could. Depends on which team is playing. And whether you have paint or not. But in other words, the point is there. Okay, so we don't want to, insult the skinheads. If this is not, definitely don't want to insult skinheads. Because in any case, they still got boots. Okay, so the football hooligans, that would be more appropriate? Yes, okay. Does it make sense? So that's the point, is that it's not about the anger after frustration, it's just how they express it. You know, it's just like this. The kid is there, you know, suddenly the Jeep pulls up, drags his father out of the house, shoots him, right? The mother comes running out, yelling and screaming, and grabs, you know, sitting by the husband and looks at them. How could you kill him? Then they shoot her, right? No? Then they pick him up, drag him off, you know, to make him a slave somewhere like this. Finally, he gets out of this. And then he goes to university, gets his degree, you know, like that, works, you know, develops a big world, you know, international organization, you know, about, you know, all these things, you know, freeing kids from all this stuff and all that. Now that anger is considered great. He's done a fabulous thing with it. So the problem is not the anger, right?
No.
So it's not that they're trying to solve the problem of the anger. It's just that it should be used in a way that overall society benefits so that everybody can enjoy from his anger. Right? But the Vedic system is get rid of the anger. Then automatically everything works nicely for everybody. Does that make sense? You know, like sometimes you can go into these small villages out in the middle of nowhere, you know, in some out-of-the-way place. And even though it's not very well organized, the people are really nice. So it's not that they're having to, in a sophisticated way, dovetail their anger, you know, in a socially positive way. Just they're nice. Because there's less anger. They're there on the land, you know, it gives what they do, whatever God gives them, okay, that's what happens. And whatever they have, they'll share it with you. Does that make sense? Yeah, so then it works nicely. So that's the whole point. Prabhupada say you get rid of this anger, then that's what's actually going to make the social things work. But the demons, they increase the anger so much. That's what motivates them. Because they're more and more angry, they're more and more prosperous. Right? They take over the universe. Does that make sense? But the Vedic is get rid of that by the Garbhodan. Otherwise, then, if you don't use the Garbhodan, you have someone interested in sense gratification. There's every chance that this isn't their first birth. So they're a bit frustrated from all their sense gratification before, so anger is a natural part. Is that okay? Yeah. Is it? Yeah? 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 Yeah, so in other words, it's not that you don't, these sophisticated elements aren't good, it's just they shouldn't be a veneer on a society of very angry people. It should be a you know, in other words, that's the top. That's what holds it together. You know, it's just like taking all your garbage and sticking it in these nice black plastic bags and putting the little zippy thing on it. You know, it looks really good. You know, you pile it all up there. It looks really nice. If it wasn't in the bags, you'd say, what is this? Is this a slump? Same garbage, just it's got that little veneer on the outside. So, but the Vedic thing is that these social things are just like basis things. The real thing is the duty, sense of duty, and the relationships and all that. That's the higher thing. It's so natural, the sophisticated social elements, you know, the altruism, philanthropy, all these different things. These are just normal. And the real thing is the relationships and the interaction. Well, nowadays, it's the higher principle is what do you think? Yeah, philanthropy and altruism. That these are like, you know, pinnacle kind of stuff. So that's the thing, is the Vedic culture, because it's about the person, it flips it. So then it's sometimes thought that, oh, we don't care about these things. We don't care about them as goals, and well, that's what holds the social fabric together. Those are, you know, how you say, what you use, you know. Yeah, they're just elements you use. So that's the difference. You know, it's just like, let's say, for someone who doesn't, how you say, so for someone who, I can't even remember the name of it, but it's Southern California, they make their beverages out of the local grapes there, like that. And that's it's the wino special, you know, it's very cheap, easy to get. You know, so people who drink that, then maybe on a special occasion they'll get something a little bit fancier. But for some people in another, the fancy stuff, that's what they normally do. And if they're going to go out of their way, then they're there at the auction trying to buy that sunken treasure chest that's been underwater for the last 150 years of, you know, some kind of Jamaican rum. They're putting up their, you know, their thing for that. You know, because there's, you know, other stuff. Of course, that's what you, you know. So the Vedic is that these social platitudes that everybody talks about in political correctness is an assistant element to a higher principle. So when we speak strongly, it's only when it becomes reversed, and this higher principle, the lower one becomes the higher, and then the higher one having gone to the lower, since it's lower, then what do we care about the lower? So it's thrown away. So that's why approaching authority and, you know, how you say, being God-conscious, that these are the higher principles. If that's in place, all the other social things will start to work. But we're saying, no, we have to endeavor for, you know, world peace. No, we have to endeavor for God-consciousness. World peace will naturally follow. Because, as Prabhupada points out, it's when they made the League of Nations, I think after World War I, I think. And then it didn't quite work out so great, so after World War II, they put in United Nations. And then there was a certain amount of flags then, because that's all there was. But now it's every year there's a new flag, because, you know, we're supposed to be united. Why are there more flags? You know, each country splits, and now there's two flags for, you know, like two for the price of one, right? You know, so, does that make sense? So that's the difficulty, is that even though they're trying so hard, it's not working because it's not based on the principle of God consciousness and duties. It's based on just everybody cooperating together and these second level platitudes. And they're not strong enough without these higher ones to make them work like that. So it's not that they're not good. It's just that they're not good on their own. Like that. But that's how our Arjuna opens the Gita, is that if the Varna Shankar are born, you're going to, all these nice welfare works and everything is going to disappear. Because, in other words, you don't even hear about this. This is the only time we really hear about it. Because before, that was just normal. I remember reading something, it was describing about the three levels of prostitutes in the Vedic culture. So the topmost, they're the ones, one, they make big bucks. But they're the ones that do yajnas and give in charity and do all religious acts. That's one of the ways to distinguish them, like that. The second level are, you know, qualified, but they're not on that platform. The third level is what nowadays we call prostitutes. So in the Shastra, when they're talking about, you know, the prostitutes who come out of Dwarka and greet Krishna and all that, we're not talking about the third level. We're talking about the first level. You know, they're the society girls, you know, like that. So it's a whole different kind of thing. Is that it was just common. Here is that they did, you know, and one would not consider this a great occupation. But they're doing yajnas and giving in charity and distributing food and doing all kinds of nice things. It's because they just understand this is that, and this is, you know, is that something? So that's the thing, the Vedic cultures, these, what nowadays are considered the high-level platitudes, these were just normal before. And then what they would consider doing your duty. Yudhishthira is known for doing his duty. And then in that, what he gives in charity, you've once never heard of before. Feeding 100,000 Brahmins at one sitting, and then when they're finished, then the next batch, and that's going on all day. And that's not just one day, that's going on for the whole time of the yagya. So you're feeding millions of people, and not just, you know, something cheap, you know, like that, but it's very, very nicely done. So that's the thing, is that these kind of things were just natural and automatic. You know, and why, like say, like Krishna would take care of the shoes. You know, it's because of this element of political correctness. It means you don't lose a king's shoes. You know, you don't give one king someone else's shoes. You want to start a war, that's how it happens. Right? Then Sahadev would then greet them and then take them inside. You know, it's because you have to deal perfectly. They're kings. You know, and everybody in their entourage, it's not that there's one king. There's the king, his family, the prime minister, his other things, his generals. You have to know how to deal with each one of them perfectly. That's political correctness. Right? But here we're just calling it hosting. Then they get inside, and I think Sahadev, he would seat them. Because now it's one thing to, okay, don't mix up the shoes. Two, to actually greet and deal with their party properly. But now, where to sit them? Because you have to know all the kings, who is what, whose allies, whose enemies, whose, you know, social status, so that you place each one perfectly, so that they don't think, why am I sitting next to him? You know? Like that. He's either, you know, he's a small-time king, I'm a big king, or he's my enemy, or, you know? Or even, let's say, they're allies, but the women don't get along. So it's not that you're just discussing amongst men here, so then you have to do, you have to know all this. So now that's like political correctness at its pinnacle. So then we're saying, oh, we don't care for political... What do you mean? This is just how we do things. So the modern things that they talk about, these are the great things. This is just how we would just say society is supposed to run. And that's why it can run like that, is just not because the higher principles of duty and everything. So here the duty of taking care of a guest means it goes down to the point you take care of every little detail. Not that you're sitting on the couch and when, you know, the person knocks on the door and you just yell and then they come in and then they come and, you know, see what's happening, you're watching something and you go and says, yeah, there's drinks in the fridge, you know, and then you go on with your watching. We're not talking about this, you know, level of being a good host. You know. Does this make some sense? Or? Yeah, so that's the whole thing, is that that's why Prabhupada talks on these, and people say, oh, that's just sentiment. No, this is actually what makes things work. That one's trying to do it on these other planets, that's sentiment. Because sentiment means what's not practical. So if it was working so great, why is it that things aren't holding together so good? Right? That's the whole thing. Because if you look at it, politically things aren't doing fabulous. They talk about it. I mean, are people talking fabulous now about the European Union? No, they're just hoping it stays together and the euro doesn't crash. Basically. You know, so that's the whole thing. But before, when they could talk about the platitudes, then, oh, it's great, it's this, it's that. But now you just get down to the reality, then they're just hoping they can make it function. So that's the whole thing, is that these things are, they don't have the tools to hold it together, which are what they call sentiment. And what they're using as tools are actually, that's sentiment. Right? So it's that's the mode of ignorance. It reverses everything. So it makes what's right look wrong and what's wrong look right. You break down authority, so everybody's, you know, a free man, and then that's how we'll all, you know, organize these huge, you know, world alliance. That doesn't make sense. You know? You know, we'll throw out the food, and then that way we'll all, you know, we want to make it equal, so we'll throw out the food, then we all have nothing. You know, like that. Yes, now this is great, you know. You know, my brother in starvation. So it's just, you know, it's weird. Okay, what is it?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki.
Jai
Nitai Gaura Prema Nanda.